When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, WNBA playoffs, game two, doubleheader tonight. Sun, Liberty, 8 Eastern, then the Wings and Aces. WNBA countdown gets it all started. 7:30 on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And as we welcome you back to our studio, we're live as always from the Seaport. We're brought to you by Patron. Perfection starts with Patron. Let the record show. When RG3 was suggesting that the Olympic track team was a little much, Dominic, you suggested you think you could beat RG3 in a race.
I did say that.
I'll cook them right now.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm gay for that.
Hamstrings will be pulled.
I ain't run for free in a long time. Not gonna start today. Put your money up. I ain't ran for free since I was at Maryland. So y'all get the money right. Me and Robert will race.
All right.
Wait, I won't even be close.
No. Graziano's not running, but he's got the hands. All right, let's show it to you last night. We had two Monday night games last night, including a battle of unbeatens. The Eagles on the road against the Buccaneers. Anyone buying the Bucs? Most people said no. Let's see if they could convince you you were all wrong. Jalen Hurts has enough time to make a sandwich back there, Jeff, and then throws a nice ball.
All starts with protection, Greeny. Gotta love it. Hey, I spend all day back. I'll find somebody open in a minute
Here we go, we found one. That incredible pass and talk about the protection. It was nice.
He smoked a cigarette in the pocket, bro. Come on.
I don't even think Zacchaeus was on the roster yet when
they snapped the ball. All right, then the Eagles up 10-3 and a festival of turnovers would ensue. That's Baker Mayfield being picked, and now we're going the other way, and it's Jalen Hurts being picked by Devin White, and then we're going to go back the other way, and eventually it's going to be Rashad White fumbling. So RG3, it was a sloppy affair in the rain.
Yes, it was a sloppy affair, and you talk about Rashad White right here. Jalen Carter comes in and punches the ball out. I mean, my
That's
ball.
Nasty. Nasty.
Looking like Mike Tyson out there. Spinal.
13-3. Eagles at the end of a chaotic half. And then, Dominique, how about DeAndre Swift with the hole in the hurdle?
Oh, yeah. Now, this is the time when you can talk about O-line play. Okay, that's an enormous hole right there. Come on, Swift. Stay on the ground, man. This makes me nervous.
Is that Ronaldo Nehemiah?
You know Ronaldo Nehemiah. I love it, Greeny.
Elevation.
Bring it back.
16 carries, 130 yards for him. No, this is a play that should be illegal.
Best play in football.
If it's awful.
Haters gonna hate. Best play in football. Go get it. Another touchdown.
20-3 Eagles. And then let's put it away with the second worst play in football. Eagles roll to a win. 25-11 is the final score. And so, look, here's the bottom line of it. The Eagles have the problems that every team in the NFL would love to have. Everyone is underwhelmed with the way they're playing, and yet they're 3-0. What do you say about that?
I'm not underwhelmed at all. O-line, D-line domination. It wins football games. It might not be quarterbacks throwing for 70. Everybody gets a score. Everybody's the fastest in the game, whatever all that is. What you do know is you're going to win a lot of games this way. I talked about it last week. This is a bully ball football team, and they show it week after week. And by the way, 470 yards this week, 430 yards. Is that bad? I mean, that's ugly. That's what we're calling ugly. Every offensive coordinator would take it every week, irrespective if they are hot quite yet. They are winning games and they are beating teams up.
Yes, but to your point, they're not getting yards. They're just not being efficient in the passing game. And it's not just that the efficiency, it's the turnovers as well. Yeah. They're like one of the worst teams in the league when it comes to plays over 10 yards in the passing game. So when you listen to Sirianni talk and he talks about the yards that they got, but they're not playing that well, they have different goals, right? Last year they played in the Super Bowl. Yep. They're not just trying to merely win games. They're trying to put together a season that they know makes them confident going into the playoffs that they can win the game and win the Super Bowl. And that's only going to happen if they get more efficient in the passing game. But right now, the way they're winning, there is nothing wrong with that. Dominate up front, run for 200 yards back-to-back weeks. I think you have a stat. Go ahead and share that stat about how many rushing yards that they had before contact.
343 out of 460 yards, 343 before contact. That means the dude's not getting touched 343 yards a game without a dude getting touched. And that's straight balling.
And when you have a running back with the last name Swift, he can get Swifty on you.
So, I mean, that's really the question here. Because Jalen Hurts was what made everyone excited about the Eagles last year. Yes, they've got the dominant play on the offensive and defensive line, and they may have the defensive rookie of the year on their defensive line now in Jalen Carter. But we watched this kid, Jalen Hurts, just going like this, and I think we all – we want to see that again. We want to see him now. He's the best player in the world, and that's what we're not seeing.
Yeah, we're not seeing it, but we are seeing that he still has that ability. I think that's what you want and what we talk about from a lot of quarterbacks, that extra something is when the play breaks down, when nobody's open. It's that play right there. Right. He's able to do stuff like that. It gives you confidence in what your team's going to be able to do because sometimes it's not going to work out. Sometimes you got to sit in the pocket, take a hit, and throw it just barely over the outstretched fingers of the defender for a bomb touchdown. So I'm not worried about them in the long run.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is. And the fact is the Eagles are not built with the goal of entertaining us in September, right? Like, that's the whole – you talk about roster building and Howie Roseman and what he does, right? Like, yes, it's great that they found that quarterback in the second round and developed him. Outstanding. Big move to get A.J. Brown, aggressive move in the draft. You know, even get DeAndre Swift during the draft when he becomes available. But the reason they've stayed good is because Howie Roseman has consistently maintained depth and quality on the offensive and defensive lines. It is the highest priority they have as roster builders. You can see what it does. Nobody in the league has a good offensive line.
Yeah.
What an advantage that is.
I mean, he said it all.
Yeah,
that needs to be repeated.
Jeff is so happy. He doesn't even know what to say.
Well, Cross did some work. That's what I'm talking about.
The question is, are they the team to beat in their own division? Up until Sunday morning, we might have said no. And then by the time we went to sleep Sunday night, that all changed. The Cowboys laid an egg against Arizona Sunday. And yesterday, D. Wood, sitting right there, suggested the Cowboys quarterback needed to do something about it.
But what happens when the opposing team is giving you that smoke as well and is forcing you, Dak Prescott, now you have to elevate your game. That's what didn't happen in this game, particularly in the red zone.
Yep.
Dak Prescott was not able to elevate his game. That, to me, is a sign. Like, are you going to be able to elevate your game when teams are playing blow for blow with the Dallas Cowboys?
That's a really good point that he makes. I love it when he makes points and his sleeve rolls up all by himself.
He's like,
he's yelling at me and his sleeve is just going up his arm. And I'm sitting there looking at it. I'm like, well, he doesn't have a shirt on under there. But anyway, the point that he's making is a good one, which is Sunday was the kind of game when you showed up, as Rex said sitting there, you thought you were just going to throw your jock out on the field and the other team was going to lay down. And that's not what happened. You got pushed around a little bit. Your defense looked like it missed Trayvon Diggs and all that stuff. That's when you need your quarterback to say, I got you guys, get on my back. Yeah. Dak didn't do it.
I agree. He didn't do it. But like, we act like Dak hasn't done it in the past. He does it plenty of times in the regular season. He's done it in the postseason.
Yep.
What we're looking for Dak to do is to get them to a championship game. I think the red zone efficiency was the problem.
Yep.
Part of that is on Dak. Part of it's on the play calling and the play design, as it always is. This is a play in the red zone that we're looking at, and you expect to get him out on the pocket, use his athleticism, move the defense. Who's he supposed to throw it to? Like, there's nothing there.
Make a play, Dak. Make a play.
Yeah, now that's
elevate the team.
Yeah, how do you elevate the team in a moment like that? And that's a cherry pick play, but a lot of the plays down there look a lot like that. So
the next play, they get sacked, right?
Yes, you can expect different things or have higher expectations of the quarterback, but we got to be fair to what we expect from this particular quarterback.
What did they miss in the red zone? Because that was really the factor in this week's game. They had a bunch of red zone chances. They got almost nothing to show for it. Why?
Everyone's going to say it's because Kellen Moore's not calling plays anymore, but that's not the point. The fact of the matter is they missed Ezekiel Elliott, right? Everyone said he was washed, but for him, in short yarded situations and near the goal line, he was 17 for 21 on conversions last year on third and fourth down. For them, on third and ones and fourth and ones. So for me, it's like everyone needs to apologize to Zeke, right? Tony Pollard is a great running back, but he's not a finisher like Zeke was in the red zone. And then the other part of it is they have the personnel to make it work. Right? They've got Gallup, they've got CeeDee Lamb, they've got Brandon Cooks, but they don't have the tight end that really can be the security blanket for a quarterback. We all know that. But there's a guy out there, plays for the Atlanta Falcons, that they could possibly go get, who they're not using right now, in Kyle Pitts. That would give them that mismatch in the red zone that I think that they're missing. And right now, they're 3-for-11 in the red zone when it comes to converting on touchdowns over the past 2 weeks. That is not good efficiency. Yeah. So even though they move the ball, they're not scoring.
I'm old enough to remember when Kyle Pitts was going to revolutionize the NFL. When he came in, he was going to be a weapon like we had never seen. He was the first non-quarterback taken in that draft after Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson and Trey Lance. And he is not being used much in Atlanta. They live to run the football. Now, the Cowboys made an aggressive trade a few years ago for Amari Cooper, and it made a difference during this season. Does that feel like an option?
I mean, I think if they get to that point, look, they had a bad game. Like, it is a bad, like, at some point this year, the Eagles will play a bad game, right? And somebody might get them, right? Like that happens. So if it becomes a trend. Now, talk about red zone offense. I believe through 3 weeks, there's only three teams in the league that have a lower red zone touchdown percentage than the Cowboys. They're going to have to do something to fix it. And if that becomes it, if it's available, absolutely. They're not out there looking to make that aggressive move, and they think they have the personnel to do it. I know Jeff doesn't think this is a big deal. They were down three offensive linemen in this game, right?
two going to the Hall of Fame.
Probably. Yeah, right. Two that are going to the Hall of Fame. Yeah. So look, it was a bad Jonathan Gannon. The Cardinals coach was designing defenses to stop the Cowboys with the Eagles for years. I think we can give them one bad game.
Let's not let the defense off the hook.
Thank you.
Like, can we not let, like, this Thank was a you. Defense we all just talked about was revolutionizing football for the last 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, you know, they get a 187 and two touchdowns in the first half. They're averaging 11. The Cardinals rushed for, had 11.4 yards per carry in the first half. Like, that's unacceptable. So there is some complimentary football that has to be played. We can always lay at the foot of the quarterback. But from the defensive side, they have to play better as well to keep this team in it. And again, the red zone, they got to be better. But this was a complete failure for the team. They played poorly. It happens. I think it's an anomaly.
So then let's change the topic. Let's get out of the small picture and let's go to the big picture. It feels like there were three teams in the NFC that have separated themselves. And that, you know, we'll see what Green Bay is. We'll see what Atlanta is and a few of these others. But at the end of the day, San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Dallas look like they're going to be the three teams to beat in the NFC. Two of them are the physical, punch-you-in-the-mouth style. And then you got the Cowboys, who are based on speed and all that kind of stuff. Does that work, and do they need to make some kind of move to elevate themselves beyond those two
teams? I don't think they need to make some type of move.
Kyle Pitts, make it happen.
I wouldn't say no to Kyle Pitts if he was available, but you're going to have to give up something significant to make that happen. So I think you're definitely right. They aren't as physically opposing as those other teams, but that doesn't mean that you can't win. And so they're trade-offs. You're not going to both be a run-stuffing defense and also a great pass-rushing defense. So, like, I think they made the smart trade-off for modern football. I would like to have an offense that gets me a lead and then a pass rush that ends the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they know that on third down in five or six, that you have to do that four or five times. Sooner or later, we're going to kill your drive or cause a fumble. So, like, I don't hate the way this team is built. They had one game. It was bad against a bad opponent. Let's move on and stop hyperventilating.
There's a pretty big difference between being an elite run defense and giving up 222 rushing yards to the Cardinals.
Yes.
I think there's some middle ground where they could settle.
But I don't think that the Cowboys are built in a finesse way. Like, I've said this before, but going into this season and what we saw the first couple games, this isn't Dak's team anymore. It's the Cowboys' defense's team. Mm. And when they give up 222 rushing yards and they allow Josh Dobbs to have a 43-yard run on them, there's a problem there. So I think all three teams are actually built the same way. The running game was carrying the Cowboys the first couple weeks. It wasn't Dak's arm that was winning them games. So it was a bad game. But all of these teams are built the exact same way, and it's the blueprint to beat any of them.
And
run the football against them to neutralize their pass rush.
Weren't bad. I mean, like, their offense, they rushed for almost 200. I mean, like, it wasn't like they just played this
red
soft.
Zone.
It's red zone. Yeah, 100%.
It could have been a lot worse. Quite candidly, they did not have by any means the worst day on Sunday. As we continue, Sean Payton's team was humiliated Sunday in Miami. They've yet to get a win. Is it already time to say that this thing is going to be a failure? We'll dive into Denver. Plus, how much longer should the Jets stick with Zach Wilson? A New York legend says he has seen enough, and you will hear it directly from him as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot. taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we are back with the late game last night. Taped up Joe Burrow and the Bengals taking on the Rams. And the last thing in the world, RG3, that you need to see when your calf is hurting is Aaron Donald.
Exactly. You got 99 problems, and Aaron Donald is one. This is exactly what they didn't want to happen. Good job by Joe protecting himself and not fighting that one.
Bengals still haven't scored a touchdown in the first half of a game this season. Yeah. It was tied at 6-6 at the half. Then, Dominique, why is no one covering Tyler Higbee?
Oh, don't worry about it. DB's taking a rep off. We just chilling, baby.
They actually were just chilling. Zach Taylor is calling timeout before the play, so it does not count as a touchdown, and it winds up a field goal. Meantime, on the other side, Jeff Saturday, we've been waiting for Jamar Chase, and we finally found him.
Oh, I was waiting on him. I like it. I see it in the middle making catches. Nate grabs 12 catches, buck 45. Dry saw it too.
And new set of downs for the Bengals, and it's Joe Mixon who takes this one in and then takes it to the stands. Bengals take a 13-9 lead. Rams first and 10 at the Cincinnati 30. Dominique, what do tips equal?
Tips equal picks. Let's go. I love it. Nothing better than a free interception.
And then RG3, how about the dance here?
Oh, yeah, they're getting funky with it. Those jerseys are clean, by the way.
And that, with the dance and everything, that looks spectacular. Fourth quarter, Rams down 10. It's Matthew Stafford. It's Puka Nacua. He's been terrific.
Got him.
Touch him down.
Put him in the end zone.
That could have been it. It could have swung the whole fantasy matchup.
So they go from Puka to Tutu. A touchdown. Tutu Atwell. It's 19-16.
All name team.
That was the Rams' first third down conversion of the game. Yep. A minute left.
And they had one more chance to win it with a minute to go. But the onside kick is no good. Burrow, 26 of 49. And they get the win. Was it risky on there last night?
There is risk to go out there and potentially re-injure it, but there's also a risk to go out there and be 0-3. So I wanted to be out there for my guys.
It's appreciated when your quarterback goes out there and is dealing with something as significant as he was and able to battle through it, throw the ball 40-something times. So that was really, you know, escaped a couple pressures too and got the ball out of his hand. So that was big time.
So again, Burrow ends up throwing the ball 49 times yesterday, third highest of all quarterbacks in week 3. Cincinnati, you see the schedule, 3 more games before their bye week, so not much of an opportunity for Burrow to get a real chance to rest it. Then right after that, they have huge games against San Francisco and Buffalo, so this is going to be fascinating to see the way they handle this. Meanwhile, let's talk about the Broncos. They allowed 70 points in an NFL game on Sunday, and after the game, their head coach, Sean Payton, still winless in Denver, was understandably cranky as he had this exchange with a reporter.
I know that you said it's embarrassing, but this is kind of an historic game.
I'm aware.
Third time the team has scored 70 points over 700.
What's the question? What's the question?
How do you feel about it being
I just finished telling you.
Historically embarrassing.
Next question.
He's not in a good mood.
I mean, in his defense, The question was, I want to know how you feel about it being historically embarrassing.
Right.
Yeah, I'm good. You're just being a jerk. Next question.
Basically, having been a reporter and Graziano was there, we might as well have just said, can you just say that again? Like, just say more of that. Yeah. Talk about how embarrassed you are and all that. That's all that we're looking for. We didn't get it, and it is what it is. Look, the bottom line, I mean, you know from your brief time what it's like to stand up there and answer very difficult questions. I mean, he's a person in a bad spot right now. I'm not sure how much worse he could get than 70 points getting hung on your defense.
And he didn't help himself, obviously, coming into the season, some things he said about the past regime, all those things don't help you, and so now it kind of gets piled on. I think, honestly, though, the most disappointing part for me was Garrett Bowles, who is their tackle. After the game, after they lose, he makes the comment of, you know, all he's done is lost in 7 years. And we're three games in the season, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Let's hone it in a little bit and understand that it is ugly, it is embarrassing, but we have a lot of football left. You have to have that tough mindset. I think that's the part that would probably scare Sean Payton more than anything, is if that's leaking into your locker room 3 weeks in the season, we got bigger issues.
Mm-hmm. What are we seeing here? I mean, that you don't give up 70 points in a game if you are busting it on every rep, and all, right? I mean, like, that was not among the many things that happened. RG3 was a little bit of laying down. I mean, you watch some of those highlights. Yeah. The Broncos, no one's trying to make a tackle late.
What are you going to do when it's 53? You're going to come back? You're going to try to get hurt. You're in Miami. It's hot. It's like, hey, man, I ain't trying to pull my hammy either.
Literally, I mean, they could play with a running clock.
I mean, I just think that what you saw on the field was a reflection of what's going on in the building right now. The greatest offense of all time, on a per-play basis, averaged 7.0 yards per play. Right now, the Broncos are giving up 7.2 yards per play. They're historically bad on defense. It's not just historically embarrassing. But when you talk about Sean Payton, I understand what he said in the offseason about Nathaniel Hackett and the previous regime. But I've been more upset about what he said about Russell Wilson. Because this year, Russell Wilson has not been the problem for the Denver Broncos. He may have been last year, but the problem for the Denver Broncos right now is Sean Payton and him not taking accountability for how bad they are playing. So if you're going to go out there and say that your quarterback needs to stop kissing babies and shaking hands, well, you better start kissing some babies and shaking hands, because right now you're on the hot seat because you were supposed to come in there and turn this bad boy around. And when you get beat 70-20 and you're throwing your quarterback under the bus in the post-game press conference and then really not being willing to accept the criticism from the media when you play bad, your job as a coach is to say, that's on me. I will take care of this. And he's not doing that right now.
You think they sell defenses at Walmart? They need to find one now. That was atrocious. And I think one of the things that I sense in the Garrett Bowles moment, and like, I get where he's coming from. Maybe you don't tell this honestly to the media, but going into a building after just getting demolished like that, it's terrible. Yeah. It is terrible. And as somebody who cares about, look at how much he cares about this. Like, this guy's crushed. And, like, I understand that. Maybe you lied to the media, but that man is dejected. I've never been a part of a team that was as embarrassing as the team was last year and then followed up with a start like this. That sucks. Going into the building this morning is terrible.
Let's just underline the stat that Robert just gave you here, because sometimes, you know, you hear so many things coming at you on television. They are allowing more points per play than the worst defense ever. Right? I mean, literally ever. So right now, they are the worst defense ever through three games.
I mean, giving up 726 in one game will skew the average, right? And on our three-game
sample. They're playing Justin Fields.
I bet that average drops a little bit on Sunday.
What do you think? What if the Bears light it up against them?
Oh.
That would be terrible.
Not for the Bears, it wouldn't be.
No, right. Obviously, no. I mean, for Denver, we're talking about Denver. But, yeah, I think they have to look good against a Bears offense that doesn't look capable of doing anything right now. Look, I mean, you talk about Sean Payton, talk about Garrett Bowles. There is not a template for how to conduct yourself after you give up 70 points.
No. Yeah.
Like, no one knows what that feels like. So
I mean, I think that what Greeny is getting us towards is something has to happen.
Yes.
And they're committed to the coach. They're committed to the quarterback. I think then you start looking around the building at coordinators, and that feels unfair on a short period. But when it gets this bad, if they lose to the Bears, who I saw in the newspaper there had F's for everything in their recent game, if they lose that, there is going to be some changes.
I mean, the coordinator is Vance Joseph, is in his third game, right?
It's
early
to do it on him.
But think back to the offseason. The Broncos were one of the teams that were in the sweepstakes to hire Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator. They lost out to
Miami.
The Dolphins. Yeah. So did that make a difference? Did the Vic Fangio revenge game?
It's easy to overreact when you get 70 put on you, but the season's still not over for them. It's still early.
They can still turn this around. I'm going to say it's not an overreaction. There's no such thing as an overreaction when you get 70
there
put
is,
on you.
There is, because the season's still young. Yeah. But the thing is, Greeny, Sean Payton was not the offensive genius on that field.
It was Mike McDaniel. For sure. Yes. All right, I got a break here on that thought. We're coming up in just a moment because he has lost the legend. The greatest Jet of them all has seen enough. Where on earth do they go from here? You can't miss this. Next.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore his seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We are back at the bottom of the hour. Time to play Sound Off. Let's hear what some people around the world of football are saying. Let's start with Davante Adams. The Raiders are 1-2. Davante is already losing patience.
I don't got time to wait around. You know, I mean, it's not a personal thing. I mean, it is a personal thing, but it ain't just about me, but I mean, it's not my mentality to sit here and try to take all season to figure it out. You use these early games like this to establish our identity, and we're not doing things the right way to establish a winning culture early in the season, so we got to do something to turn that around.
RG3, what do we make of that?
Well, Davante, it is personal, 100%. He's got more football behind him than he does in front of him, and he's kind of questioning why are we not going for it on 4th and 4 on our own 8-yard line. Mm-hmm. They want to make winning decisions. Their coach has to make winning decisions. And they got him the football. That wasn't the problem.
Sure did.
But they need to make sure that they're not throwing the ball to the other team.
Frankly, he has never seemed happy since he got there. From the very beginning, sometimes the grass isn't always greener. Next stop, after losing to Arizona, Dak Prescott directed his attention at the media. Listen.
Y'all put us on top of the world. We know who we are, and in that same sense, I'm sure the media got what they wanted. It sucks. It's humbling, but to say it's a wake-up call, we knew we had a lot of adversity, and we just didn't get it done.
What was that, Nate?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't defend that. When you losing does wild things to people, and getting embarrassed makes you say crazy things. I don't know what he's talking about. Nobody put them anywhere. Maybe he's talking directly to Stephen A.
Was that aimed exclusively at Stephen A. Smith?
Directly at Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah. He was the only one who wanted to see that.
Yeah, they'll get a win this week, and then he'll be back to his normal happy-go-lucky self.
And they got New England this week. I don't know how easy that game is going to be. New England, of course, just beat the Jets. Joe Namath is Jets royalty. So when he went on the Michael Kay Show on ESPN Radio New York yesterday and said this about Zach Wilson, the world took notice.
I wouldn't keep him. You know, I've seen enough of Zach Wilson, all right? I've seen enough. How can a coach say the locker room's together? Are you telling me there aren't some cats on the defensive side saying, whoa, man, what's wrong with you? We're looking at an offense that just doesn't play well. For this fan, they need to make major changes from top to bottom.
They've lost Joe.
Wow.
And to be very clear, for those of you who don't know, Namath is not just the greatest player the Jets have ever had. He has been their biggest supporter.
Yeah.
Namath is always positive. He's always building them up. He's always supporting in the good times and the many bad. So it is worth noting when he says, I've seen enough of Zach Wilson. Jeff, what are we going to do? If you're in that building right now, how are you handling this situation? The world is seeing what they, for whatever reason, are not willing to acknowledge, which is that the kid cannot play.
As Mike T. Tannenbaum always says, scour. Call Carson Wentz. Call somebody. You got to find somebody, right? If it's hitting the locker room the way it feels like it is, and you feel like the youth on your team is starting to turn on each other, you saw the Michael Carter incident on the sideline.
Garrett Wilson, too.
Garrett Wilson. So you're seeing these things kind of evolve in the locker room. That's a bad sign, right? Because they're too good of a football. But let's be clear about the whole top to bottom. The whole top to bottom thing is they did what they had to do. They benched their number two pick, and they went and found the best quarterback in the NFL, in their opinion, in Aaron Rodgers. It was just a catastrophic injury. And it is what it is. Most teams, probably all teams, minus the San Francisco 49ers, if they lose their starting quarterback, it's going to go in the tank. It happened to go in the tank. So I think Douglas did what he did. Sala did what he – they were doing the right thing. It just didn't work out. And that's just part of it. So now just try to recover something by bringing it out and to hold it together until Rodgers gets back.
You got to find hope, which is why you're talking about bringing people in. Right. The way that I'm accustomed to doing that on teams – so, like, I played for the Ravens, and they won the Super Bowl with Ray Lewis and that defense, and the defense had this mantra, if they don't score, they don't win. They also said, we got to score sometimes.
Ooh.
When I was there, our defense wasn't as good as those, and our offense wasn't as bad as that offense, but that mentality was still there, and we understood that in practice, if we got a fumble or an interception, you pitch the ball. So I'm sorry, Robert Saleh. I'm sure you don't believe that this is something you should do. This is me getting an interception against the Browns.
Okay, Foxy.
And you know what? Ray Lewis running up behind me yelling all types of profanity because he wants the ball, because our responsibility is not only to get an interception, it's to score. So it's not just their job to score, it's our job to score. They just need to think that way also.
I get that. Now, G3, you brought that up. The defense, they need to be like the Steel Curtain. They need to be like the 85 Bears. They need to be... But those also, they played in a different era. I mean, you're not going to win if you don't do anything offensively these days. Right. So I'm asking you the question that might be unanswerable.
Right.
Zach Wilson's going to play again this week unless something happens I don't know about. What can they try to accomplish? They have a bad offense, an incredibly bad offensive line. Yes. They can't run the ball. Yes. The other team is begging Zach Wilson to throw it. Mm-hmm. He genuinely looks like he doesn't know what he wants to do with it. What can they get right?
Yeah, I think all of the things you just brought up would be, why would some other quarterback want to go in there and be subjected to that?
Well,
especially if the guy is not mobile. So I know we've had some people throw around Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is not as mobile as he used to be. You're going to be standing behind an offensive line that's not able to protect you. But the bottom line is that the Jets were 2-for-14 on third downs, right? They ran the ball for 38 yards on 22 rushes. So not only are they not protecting, they can't run the ball. And for some reason, there's a disconnect in the passing game. So for me, it's like, well, you're playing it safe with Zach Wilson right now. I think all of us would admit that. They're not
they didn't turn the ball over,
all right, let's just let him go back there and throw it. Well, listen, man, you don't got any other options. You might as well go ahead and unleash Zach Wilson, whatever there is to unleash at this point, because I'm with all you guys. I'm with Joe. I'm very frustrated. Obviously, a couple weeks ago, I was saying, listen, Zach Wilson gives the pitch the best chance to win. But he is showing right now that he's not giving them the best chance to win. I do think that they have to make a change, but it's not going to be this week. They do need to bring someone in and give him a couple weeks to get to know the offense, and that will give them the best chance.
You call up a free agent quarterback right now, hey, do you want to come in 5 days, learn our playbook, and then play the Chiefs?
Right. Yeah, it could be career-ending.
Call me next week.
Let me just say this part, too. I think the hardest part for the locker room are the expectations that they had going into the season. And let me just say, from you know, I played a long time in the NFL. We had great expectations the large majority of the season. The year that Peyton got hurt, it is tough to get up. We were 2-14 or something like that. It is tough every week to go out and know that the guy starting behind you is not going to win the game. You know, it is a tough, mentally it's tough. It's a drain on the coaching staff. It's a drain on the organization. It's just hard. It's hard freaking work, man, to go there because of the expectations that you had going in. If you knew it was going to be a tough year to begin with, you've already prepped yourself. They had expectation of Super Bowl or bust, and they just unfortunately
ended. And those are clearly gone.
Yeah.
Here's my concern. Is that Garrett Wilson? You talked about the frustration you're starting to see. These are great young players.
Absolutely.
Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner. They came into this season with enormous remember the chain, the necklaces and all that stuff? Like, it feels like 30 years ago. Right. But that's what this group was expecting. I'm very worried about it just completely exploding. Winning anything of consequence is clearly out the window. But I'm afraid of it blowing up to a place that it could never come back.
And I know people are upset with Robert Saleh because of what he said over the past couple of weeks pertaining to Zach Wilson. He gives us the best chance to win. We're going to support him. But I'm telling you right now, Robert Saleh is doing an unbelievable coaching job trying to prevent this thing from turning into a circus. Yeah. So whoever they do bring in is going to have to be a guy that they truly believe in. But at the end of the day, Foxy's point is the same point I made earlier in the show. This defense has to say, we're going to win the game. Last two games, they've got one sack and zero takeaways. That's not going to be able to do it. They have to carry Zach Wilson and this Jets team to victories, and right now they're not doing it, even though they only gave up 13.
It's one of the saddest buildings. Tomorrow morning when everyone shows up to work, we should rank the saddest buildings in football. It's up there. It's behind, it's behind the Bears, maybe. The Broncos a little sadder, but third place coming in strong is the Jets.
Well, and it's worse because they feel like it was taken away from them. Right? Like if they were just playing lousy, like and not living up to expectations, but they feel like their entire season was taken away from them four plays in. I don't know how they recover from that.
All right, so let's get quickly to the Bears because they're a team who just had a really hideous – I mean, the idea that Kansas City would be playing in a game, the defending Super Bowl champs, and Taylor Swift would be sitting in the box up there getting the attention of the entire world, and my Fox affiliate cut away from this game at halftime. That's how one-sided an affair this was. How do the Bears bounce back from that? So we were going to do awesome, awful, awkward, and we ran out of time. But the awful was going to be the Bears, just in general. Where do they go from here, Jeff Saturday?
Ooh, I have no – this is as ugly as it gets. And I'll be honest, I expected more out of Justin Fields, the progression this season. This thing has just gotten out of control. And defensively, they're not playing well. You look at this roster, and again, talking about those days you go into the office and you're looking for an answer, and you're wondering, how many answers do we got to find in this situation? It's not a good situation.
What a coach's responsibility in a situation like this is to give them something to grab onto, to give them some hope, something to be optimistic about.
Yep.
I watched this game a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't got nothing. Like, I'm looking, you want to walk in that building and say, we had a rough one. We lost. Yeah. Don't worry about what's happening out there. But that's what we ran the ball well.
Yeah.
Nope. We stopped them.
Nope.
We finished strong.
No.
It's just none of that. Or we're building towards something. You see, it's coming along. It's coming up. No. None of that.
Our tight end is dating a megastar. Nope.
Nope.
How about Justin? Because the most important thing that's going on, I mean, their team is awful. Which is worse, the offense or the defense? The answer is yes.
Right.
So the question then becomes, is Fields, are we seeing the end of him too? Like, is this going to be the end that they're going to have a very high pick and a very good quarterback draft? I mean, they just traded up to get him 3 years ago. He showed some promise the second half of last season. Are we seeing the end of that too, RG3?
I don't think that we are. And I know, like, it's early in the season. The Bears look extremely bad. What I would do if I was the coach, if I'm the offensive coordinator there, I'm going back and I'm searching all of Justin Fields' Ohio State tape, and I'm stopped trying to make him run my system, and I'm going to start running his system. Yeah. Right now, he's not seeing the field the way that they want him to. They're not protecting him. Mm-hmm. We all thought that bringing in DJ Moore would have that same type of effect that Stephon Diggs had for Josh Allen.
Right.
We've seen a little bit with Calvin Ridley and Trevor Lawrence. We've seen quarterbacks be able to get that guy, A.J. Brown, for Jalen Hurts, and turn it into something else. Yeah. And right now, DJ Moore, they call him Mr. Go-Go Gadget. He is not being used in the proper way. I think it's coaching for Justin Fields. And I honestly also believe that we, as the media, took it overboard, what he said last week about coaching. I don't think he was throwing his coaches under the bus. I don't think that he was then any of that.
I mean, they deserve to get under the bus, though.
Whether
he throws them there or we throw somebody, we got to get some people under
this
bus.
It was a tumultuous week last week for the Bears, and his comments and us taking it out of context certainly made it that way, and the result on the field was utterly destroyed.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a lost cause yet. Justin Fields, we saw him last year. He finished on such a high note, playing at a much higher level, throwing the football and using his legs. Yeah. They got to get back to that.
They did make in-season changes last year to go with what he was more comfortable with, and it was electrifying. Problem is, they didn't win any of the games.
Correct.
Right? So they feel like they have to get him doing some stuff that, you know, that he has to develop in order to be successful. Look, they went in, it's Kansas City, right? Like, look, they knew they were in trouble when they walked in. But the fact of the matter is there's a blank space in their win column since last October.
Oh. Hey, oh. I hear you now.
And if the Broncos go to Chicago this week and lose to that team, then Russell Wilson and Sean Payton are never, ever going back to Denver.
There you go. I like it, Ross. I like
it. It rhymes. Let me see. Like those it. Are Taylor Swift yeah, references, let me, by the way, Jeff.
I get it. You didn't get it. Let me just say this about the hard part for the coaching staff. When you talk about changing everything up, right, mm-hmm. is we showed 2 weeks ago, we showed wide open receivers where Fields didn't see it. Right. If you're the play caller and you know you're dialing up plays that are open and the quarterback's not seeing it, you're trying to push him to get that. So there's this tension between
correct.
I'm calling the right plays, he isn't doing it, or yeah. he ain't calling the right. So there is a tension. I'm just letting y'all know,
yeah.
you may not believe it.
Right.
That is a real conversation in coaching office
sure.
because if I'm calling the ones and they're wide open, why aren't we making those plays?
No, and so they just need to shake it off. But I knew they were trouble when they walked in. If you want to do this, we can do this all day long. Coming up, week three is over. So who are RG3's top teams right now? He will count down the top five. Wait till you see who doesn't make the list. But first, Sneaky Hembo, Graziano, I love this question.
I do too.
Who is the all-time leading passer in a season by a left-handed quarterback?
Ooh.
That's by yardage. The answer Ooh. Is next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, unanimously, everyone loves the question.
Yeah.
So Tua Tagovailoa is having a monster season. He is, of course, a left-handed quarterback. Yeah. Who is the all-time leading passer by yardage in a season by a lefty?
I think I know the answer because when Tua was coming in the league, we were kind of trying to do some stories about like how rare this is and why and all that kind of stuff. The most obvious answer, I think, would be Steve Young, but it's not him. I believe it is our former ESPN colleague who's now a coach in Detroit, Mark Brunell.
That's right. That's correct. No. It's Mark Brunell.
That okay.
is right. It is Mark Brunell. Go ahead.
Wow.
That's on a lefty.
Mark Brunell is correct.
There he is. Look how young Mark looks there.
Steve Young is actually third. You know who's second is Scott Mitchell. That's the one
Ooh,
I wouldn't have gotten. I was thinking about Kenny Stabler in there. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Boomer Esiason
yeah.
won MVP season. Graziano, it's a football school.
It's a Dolphins-Broncos situation.
It's a, it's a two-score game in favor of Hemba. Okay, let's swap out Graziano right. for RG3. Get in here, Robert. Let's do a fundamental list. We are officially 3 weeks into the season, so I'm asking you to give us in order the top five teams in football right now.
Top five teams in football right now. We're going to go with number five is the Buffalo Bills. Now, they're still trying to figure out with Josh Allen when he has to put the cape on, but at the end of the day, they are making plays left and right. And while one team was getting bullied
mm-hmm.
this past week,
yeah.
they were doing the bullying. Mm-hmm. 9 sacks, 4 interceptions, and a defensive touchdown. That's the something that the Bills Mafia can truly get behind. Number 4, we got the Kansas City Chiefs. Listen, they got Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce has Taylor Swift. But this defense, a top 5 defense for Patrick Mahomes, the best one he's ever played with. The Kansas City Chiefs maybe not having the type of impact everybody thought they would this
mm-hmm.
year, but they're still one of the top 5 in the league.
And number 3.
All right, number 3, we got the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, they aren't winning pretty. We all can understand that. But they are running the ball. They're running the pigskin off the football.
Mm-hmm.
200 yards in back-to-back weeks. Jalen Hurts with a beautiful pass right there. And this defensive line and offensive line,
yeah.
unbelievable. They are playing bully ball, and I absolutely love it. Number 2, we're going to go with the San Francisco 49ers. Now, listen. Brock Purdy saved the front office after the Trey Lance debacle.
Mm-hmm.
But now he even got him some extensions. Right? They're doing everything. He's making it a very Purdy situation. Offensive line is dominating.
Uh-huh.
Defensive line is smothering people.
Oh,
and the San Francisco 49ers look primed to go deep into the playoffs once again.
So who's number 1?
Number 1, we got the Miami Dolphins. That's right. Tua Tagovailoa, Tyreek Hill. Yes, they just dropped 70. 70 points on the Denver Broncos. I mean, that's a generational butt kicking. But at the end of the day, Tua Tagovailoa, he had those jiu-jitsu training this offseason, and they're out there kicking like karate chicken. Woo! Woo! The Miami Dolphins, your number one team in the NFL.
Like karate chicken. There they are, according to RG3. The Dolphins at number one, followed by San Francisco, Philly, the Chiefs, and the Bills. So I have two questions that jump immediately to mind. The first one is, if the Dolphins stay healthy, if their quarterback stays healthy, are they the best team, truly the best team in football all year? We'll talk about that one later. The next I want to say is, if we had had this conversation a week ago,
right,
I have to believe the Cowboys would have been in the top five.
Yes.
That makes me feel like you're saying this wasn't just a bad week, but maybe it was a bad sign.
I do think it was a bad week, but we're early in the season. So yeah, when you look at these lists, I actually had the Cowboys as the best team in the NFL last week.
Right.
But anytime you go from being one of the best teams at defense, getting pressure on the quarterback, and now you're giving up 222 rushing yards, Micah Parsons and the guys look like they can't fill the gaps and they're not playing in a physical way, that's going to move you down the list. The Dallas Cowboys had a bad game, but they should never ever lose to the Arizona Cardinals led by Josh Dobbs. That's why they're not on the list.
Bad game or bad sign for the Cowboys?
Yeah, I think it's a bad game. However, you can't lose to a team like that and expect to still be in the top five. So I think they know that. They, as Dak pointed out, everyone had put them on top of the world last week, and now they are at the bottom. So they'll bounce back, I'm sure.
But there's always an element of projection in these. Yes, I get what you're saying. Right now, sure, they fall down if this was the BCS rankings or whatever it used to be in the back in the day. But they've got the Patriots, and they've got San Francisco coming up in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They're going to win both those games? They're going to win?
They'll win one of the two. I don't think they beat the 49ers anyway. I mean, I had them three anyway. So, I mean, I think from a season projection, I think the Cowboys, they blew it. It's an anomaly, though. They played a bad game against it, but I think they beat the Patriots, and I think they lose to them.
But from a season projection, are they the third best team in the NFC?
Yeah,
not better than that?
No. That's where I put them right now. I put them behind the Eagles and Niners right now is where I put the Cowboys.
From a projection standpoint, because that's what this is about, Dan. Yeah, sure. We can, I mean, through three games, any number of crazy things can happen. But the Dolphins are clearly for real if their quarterback stays healthy.
Oh, yeah.
The Cowboys, did it give you pause to watch the way they got pushed around on Sunday?
Because somebody last week, I forget whether it was Tuesday or Friday, I think it might have been Bart Scott on Friday, talked about how he didn't think they were physical enough, right? And so once you get pushed around and James Conner is running, you know, for that many yards, that's what I was hearing in my head was that comment about are they physical enough? And I think that is something that could definitely show up against the Patriots and 49ers. So here, Cowboys, here's an opportunity to prove that wrong over the next couple
final
weeks.
Final word.
Yeah, great. This team is trying to lose. The Arizona Cardinals are trying to lose games. They traded for a quarterback that wasn't on their roster, and they beat the Cowboys.
Yeah.
That, to me, is why it was a bad game. And we're going to look back on this and say, that what the heck happened early
they're
in the year.
They're playing people tough. Give the Cardinals credit. They go out there and they play tough. I'll take that quarterback in the blink of an eye. In the meantime, the first take is coming up next. Are there any concerns with the Eagles' offense? Should the Jets move on from Zach Wilson? Answers is those and other questions with Molly and Stephen A. and Shannon and Pat McAfee and Eli Manning. First take, top of the hour on ESPN. Sunday, exclusively on ESPN+, Bijan Robinson and the Falcons, Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars in London. To get ESPN+, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. All right, it has been brought to our attention that today is National Pancake Day.
Yeah.
Jeff is the ultimate pancake chef. Show us one more pancake, sir.
Listen, you got to look. Max Wright, Texas A&M, I want you to watch the Velcro. Got him? Drive him? Buckle the legs? Finish him! Finish him! Three pancakes. That is a full stack. That's what happens when you lock on. Hey, listen, number nine, he felt them legs wobble. Put him in his ground. That's what I like to see, big man.
And so we are watching Dominique Foxworth.
We're juggling.
Oh
my goodness.
Oh.
He's got skills. That really is remarkable.
Oh, wow. Pancake under the foot.
And the tragedy of it is that Jeff is going to eat them right after we finish up the show.
He's got a clean
All right. Thanks for getting up with us, as always. We'll see you back in Better Than Ever tomorrow. First take starts. Stephen A., Shannon, and company, take it away.